I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a great new cookbook out that's not only practical and informative, but entertaining as well. The design is fantastic, and its author is a pretty good writer. Well-fed, flat-broke recipes for modest budgets and messy kitchens may, as its title says, be modest budget-wise, yields food that's anything but. The food looks easy to make and good for the wallet, but seems tasty, nutritious, and striking. Its author, Emily White, joins me now. I'll ask her about the recipes in her book and the circumstances that inspired this ingenuity and resourcefulness. The book is published by Arsenal Pulp Press. The website for more is at wellfedflatbroke.com. You can follow Emily on Twitter. The handle is mvand. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program from here in Vancouver, Emily White. Ms. White, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So this book resonates for a lot of people, I guess, especially since we're both Vancouverites.
Yeah.
Because it's symptomatic of just how bloody expensive it is to live here.
Oh, it is. Yeah, and it feels like it's not getting any better.
No, no. So tell us about how you came to be, as I said in the introduction, just resourceful and adaptable, as well as ingenious in how you've sort of cultivated the sort of household that you have with the pantry that you have, but also the food that you're making out of it.
Well, it really just came out of, we didn't have a lot of money, and we weren't traveling, we weren't going out enough, so we needed something to sort of make every day special or more interesting or to keep us out of a rut. So a lot of the dishes that we've come to eat regularly come from that feeling of not wanting to be bored, or, you know, just to eat something just to get through. It's most of the recipes are about feeling good and maybe bringing a little bit of the world into our own little dining room. So
yeah, and so the other thing too is we think, because, you know, we may be scrapped for dough, that we can't eat well, and it's obvious that you are.
Yeah, I think that's a misconception. So, you know, it doesn't have to be just top ramen and Kraft dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of ingredients in the grocery store aren't too expensive. So you're looking at things like beans and grains and things that actually are the foundation of really wonderful, often really gourmet dishes. So, you know, you got to go into different aisles and you got to look at different ingredients from maybe what you're used to. But there is a lot that's affordable. And once you know what to do with it, it really kind of opens up your repertoire.
So knowing how to shop is important, and you give us tips in this book on how to do that. How about knowing where to shop? I mean, what's your experience been here in Vancouver?
Well, oh, it's all across the board.
Yeah.
So I find a store that works for me is a store that offers value in terms of additional points or good sales or a reliable flyer. I shop at supermarkets maybe every 4 to 6 weeks and do a big shop for staple foods, but we'll spend a lot of time at places like Shoppers Drug Mart or the little, you know, market on the corner that has great bulk bins, or the local Korean market near my apartment, which is fantastic for fresh vegetables and homemade kimchis and fresh tofu. So for us, it's about going to a few stores to find those deals and to stretch our dollars, but you know, it's all there. It just takes a little more time to track it all down.
You're also candid in the book about just how a hectic life it is for you guys. So other than managing a budget, managing time is something that's important for you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it feels like there's less and less of it as we go. So we have a 3-year-old who, when he was a baby, we could sort of cart him around, but now he's this independent little being with his own ideas and opinions, and so we're quite engaged with him. We've got demanding careers. We've got, you know, all of our other little projects, and so time is really important to us. And so when we're cooking, we want recipes that are satisfying, but that come together really quickly, so that we can have time to enjoy our little one and maybe some Netflix and
things like that. So you have a day job, obviously. So what's dinner like then, and how long does that all take, do you think, typically?
I take a lot of shortcuts. So, for example, I can reasonably expect that at least one or two nights a week I'm not going to want to cook. But to prepare for that, I'll prepare, say, some cooked rice in a pot, maybe on the weekend, and just leave it in the fridge for that day, and we'll have some fried rice, which you can throw together in under 15 minutes if you've got your rice prepared. Or we'll have something like a quick stir fry. There's a broccoli with tofu and peanut sauce that is great for our toddler, because it's kid friendly and it takes 10 minutes, and usually we can pull it together with what's in the cupboards. So those are the kinds of dishes that we really rely on, stuff that takes 30 minutes or less and that packs a lot into those platefuls of food.
And so Friday, I understand, is a special night at your house, is that right?
Usually. Fridays, yeah. We're really just kind of hobbling toward it. So, yeah, if we don't do takeout, we'll do some, maybe a little bit more like junk food, so like a fried pierogi and bacon or something. Mm-hmm. And I don't cook that. It's my husband.
Hey, he's a diabetic, is that correct?
Yeah, he is type 1, so he's insulin dependent.
So that obviously influences what you're cooking. Do you find that was a difficult thing to sort of consider?
I think in the beginning it felt like a lot to consider, but the reality of it is it's not that hard. So I think a lot of people depend on simple carbs like pasta and breads and white flour and white rice-based dishes. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of room in there to make a nourishing meal, even with those kinds of ingredients. So we certainly have scaled them back. Don't eat a lot of fluffy mashed potatoes anymore. But when you're looking at you know, healthy ingredients, you can do a lot with things like beans or whole grain pastas or whole grains. So it wasn't a huge transition.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, maybe we don't have as many plates of big white pasta or mashed potatoes, but we're still eating pretty well. It's not as hard once you put it into practice, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think anyone who's dealing with, say, celiac disease or diabetes, once you take the ingredients out of your diet, you really kind of adapt to fill those holes with other things.
And having a kid in the mix and a child's, say, habits and I mean, you mentioned a dish earlier that was kid-friendly. We automatically assume that kids are picky eaters. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, he is a particular eater for sure. Mm-hmm. But like I said, he's 3, so he's independent and he wants to be in charge of his little self, but it's been getting better. In the beginning, he kind of rebelled against us and would only eat peanut butter toast.
Mm-hmm.
But peanut butter and milk, actually, they're a pretty complete protein on their own, so they can survive. But I think for us, family dinners are about teaching him how to eat and teaching him how to be a person and how to, just appreciate the flavors on his plate.
And we are lucky, aren't we, living in Vancouver, that it just yields a bounty of different kinds of influences. I mean, you mentioned the Korean store near you, other Asian sort of flavors, African flavors, Latin American flavors. I mean, they're just abundant in this part of the world, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. We joke about how just living here, it's a culture all its own. Like, for example, I grew up in Surrey, which is a great Indian food, large, vibrant Indian community, and so Indian food was a part of my life growing up, and it was something that we always had, and we had Indian spices, and it just, you know, moving to Vancouver, there was a lot more, and it's always just been just great to kind of have that variety and have those options, and to always be able to be learning about something new, because, you know, there's restaurants as well, there's so much out here that's, you know, gives you a lot to work with.
And imported food? I mean, because if you go to, say, an Asian shop or you know, an ethnic store, if you will, there's imported food there. And do you find that that's expensive? I mean, it seems like it is. I mean, what's your experience been with that?
Well, it depends. If you're talking about produce, it is expensive. And I tend not to buy so much. For produce, we'll tend to buy more what's in season and what's kind of local. Just we have the benefit of living in BC, so it's all available to us here. But things like sauces and condiments and unique ingredients, tend not to be more expensive, and in fact, the brands that you find at, say, Asian stores are a lot cheaper than the supermarket brands.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can build a pantry pretty reasonably, but yeah, you have to be sort of choosy about what you're bringing home.
And in terms of the staples that one needs for their pantry, I mean, looking at this book, there are certain things that you use a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Starting from scratch, would that cost a lot?
I don't think so. I think you could buy a lot of what you need for about $40, and that sounds like a lot, and I understand up front it can be.
Yeah.
But those kinds of things are going to last you a long time, so you're going to be able to make a number of meals over a period of a month or 2 months out of those ingredients that, you know, it sort of amortizes.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have those things, because then if you've just got a pot of rice and maybe a bag of frozen peas, you can build a really flavorful dish from scratch, from almost nothing, so just what you have on hand.
So what's key for you? What do you always have on hand?
Well, we always have a variety of hot sauces.
Mm-hmm.
So we usually have your sriracha, sambal oleg, chili garlic paste. If I can find it, I get the fermented black beans and chilies. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Just add a lot of flavor to something really simple. We have a lot of gochujang. We have a variety of soy sauces. And mustards are a really great ingredient, and I think people use them a lot in vinaigrettes, but they're great for, say, tenderizing meat or adding a punch of flavor to something really otherwise simple, like a bread pudding or a fried chicken even.
Yeah, I was just thinking of the fried chicken that has mustard in it.
Yeah.
And so how do you incorporate that?
I use it instead of buttermilk, so we treat it like a brine. So it's just basically a lot of mustard in a bag with some chicken.
Yeah.
And we let that marinate for however long we need it to marinate for, and then it's just breaded and fried as if it were done in a buttermilk soak.
And kids like the taste of that as well?
They do. Actually, the mustard isn't, you don't get that sort of harsh, briny taste out of it.
Yeah.
You get really just it's savory and it's subtle and it's different. It's not, you know, it's well seasoned, but it's not super mustard.
You know, fried chicken sounds like it's hard to do, because it's you have to have a pot, I guess, you have to have oil. In your kitchen, I mean, I'm assuming you don't do it all the time, but I mean, is it as hard as I would think it is?
Oh, not at all. I mostly do a shallow fry in a cast iron pan, and we reuse our oil, and it's not too bad. Yeah, I haven't had any problems with it.
Yeah. Well, what sort of oil do you use?
I like peanut oil just for frying. It's a little more expensive. If that's not doable for several reasons, mm-hmm. I'll pick up canola as well.
Yeah.
Often you can get canola really cheap at places like Bilo or Superstore when they're just clearing out a big jug for $5.
Yeah. In terms of, the equipment one has in their kitchen, I mean, you said something very wise in the book that you ought not to buy retail and new.
No, if you can avoid it.
Yeah. So where do you go, and what have you found in your travels?
Well, I find that I don't like to commit to anything, say like a new gadget, such as a food mill or something, unless I'm sure I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
So I'll check thrift stores for things that I'm not ready to really splurge on. And I also will watch seasonal sales and things for good deals on, say, handheld appliances or new knives or...
Yeah.
So those are good.
You still have the pots you said from high school, is that right?
I do. When I graduated from high school, there was these, the PTA had collected Canadian Tire money and bought all these prizes, and I won the kitchen starter prize, which was pots and whisks and stuff. So I got all of those, and they're perfectly fine. I still use them.
Yeah, when I go into thrift shops, I mean, I haven't bought anything for the kitchen, but I mean, I look through the stuff there just because I'm, you know, curious, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that looks like, and because it's from years ago, it's old, it lasts longer than, say, the stuff that we're buying today.
It does, yeah. And you'll find a lot of things like Corningware, which is, you know, everybody needs that.
Yeah.
And the stuff lasts forever. And it's, I, I wouldn't spend full price if you can get it for, you know, a couple dollars.
Exactly. Putting this book together, I mean, it, as I said in the introduction, it just looks great, and it's inviting, and it's easy to read, and it, you know, it's one of the, I get cookbooks all the time, and when I look at them, this will seem daunting, but this just has a great inviting feel to it.
Well, that's good. That's what I was hoping for.
Yeah, and so that, I guess that was your idea in putting this all together, that you wanted that sort of feel, I suppose?
Yeah, I think sometimes we can make cooking seem like this monumental task, mm-hmm. like you have to have incredible skill or at least these, you know, I don't know, like a drive for it, I guess. And it's so simple, and I wanted to make a book that really demonstrated how easy it is to make really delicious, really nourishing meals on a budget, and also for someone who has no free time. So I wanted it to be a book about how cooking can be fun, and it can be, you know, not a chore.
And other than having made all this stuff yourself before, mm-hmm. I understand that these recipes have gone through some testing or some examination from, say, people in the medical field, the science field. Is that right?
Not the recipes per se, but I have done quite a lot of... I worked at I still do work at a research institute, but I worked at a different research institute.
Yeah.
And so just in working with the researchers there, I sort of gleaned some tips and tricks. And when I was writing the book, I asked a couple of the PhD candidates who were studying human nutrition. So they're already registered dietitians, but they're doing PhDs for research reasons or to get into academic positions. But I asked them to sort of talk to me about their top tips, and I was really encouraged to find that a lot of ours sort of aligned,
mm-hmm.
including the use of bacon fat, which was great.
Yeah, see, I was going to ask you about bacon fat, because whenever one fries bacon, there's a great deal of fat that's left in the pan.
Yeah.
I've started to save it, but I've never really used it. What are some ways that I can use that?
Well, it's like any other fat, so you can use it the way you'd use butter or the way you'd use any other oil. So it lends great flavor when you're frying something.
Yeah.
An egg fried in bacon fat is better than anything.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
You use them in cookies, I understand.
I do. So when I was quite a lot younger, my grandmother would make cookies using goose fat, which came from the geese my grandfather would hunt. And so they were such rich and delicious cookies that when I grew up and didn't have goose fat, bacon fat will work, and it did. The bacon fat makes the peanut butter just richer and almost peanuttier,
yeah.
if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
But the smokiness, it's there, but it's not super pronounced. It makes a good cookie.
And it can last in the fridge just like, say, butter?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't have to worry that it'll go bad or anything like that, right?
No, you should be fine.
Yeah.
I keep mine in a jar and just sort of scoop it out when I need it.
Do you have margarine in your fridge?
No. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like margarine is one of those foods that you don't need.
Right.
It's not that much cheaper. Butter is better for you because at least you're getting those good fats,
yeah.
and omega-3s and whatnot. So I don't bother with margarine.
And you know what? The thing that I've been using a lot lately is a slow cooker.
Really? Oh, good.
Yeah, because it's you know, I'm a guy, I guess, and I just throw everything in there.
Guess.
Yeah, and then just throw it in there, and then like 8 hours later, it's done.
Yeah, that's ideal.
Yeah, and in your experience, you found that you can make pretty much anything in there?
Yeah, you can adapt quite a lot to a slow cooker. There's instructions in there for converting recipes to, say, like an oven recipe to a slow cooker recipe, and it's not very hard to do. For us, with our busy schedules, I find a recipe that takes less than 10 hours isn't great for us.
Mm-hmm.
So the recipes in the book will be recipes that will cook on low for 10 hours because that's sort of, you turn it on before you make breakfast, and by the time you get home from work after the commute, after the daycare pickup, it's all ready to go.
And it's, I guess you're a fan of just using one utensil, one pot, if you will.
Yeah.
And it that lends itself well, doesn't it?
It does. We live in Vancouver, and we've had apartment kitchens since I've lived here, and often you get those tiny galley kitchens that have no dishwasher.
Right.
So that's where that came out of, because I hate washing them so much.
Yeah. I mean, no one likes washing dishes.
No, and when we moved into our most recent apartment, it had a dishwasher, and I think we can never go back because I don't think the marriage would last. I have to go back to washing dishes.
Pork has made a sort of a comeback, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a restaurant not too long ago, a fancy place, and they had a number of dishes, sort of pork belly and the sort. I guess that's stuff that we wouldn't have seen, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's economical, isn't it? Because, I mean, beef is getting expensive. Is that right?
It is, and I think for so long, I think things like steaks and chicken breasts and pork chops have been kind of a staple because they're easy.
Yeah.
And people start looking towards your more expensive cuts in times when, you know, maybe the economy is not great. And those are the proteins that really pack a lot of flavor and texture. And say, pork belly to me is so much fancier than say a cut of steak because of the work that has to go into it, and the end result is just so luscious and delicious. So I think people are moving towards enjoying that the time and the flavor that comes into a piece of meat from slow cooking, as opposed to just, you know, flash frying a steak.
And so
does that make sense?
Yeah. No, the recipe that you have in your for the candied pork belly.
Oh, that stuff is dangerous. Yeah. You have to make that for people, or you will eat the whole thing. And then you will need a nap.
And so is that a long process? I mean, it's 3 to 8 hours, but I mean...
It is and it isn't. So
yeah.
It's one of those things that you kind of throw in the oven and forget about.
Okay, so it's one of... Yeah, okay. So that's an easy one for me, you know?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the recipes in the book are about, especially your tougher cuts of meat, braising. So braising is wonderful because everyone thinks that you've slaved over this pot of food for so long and it's rich and delicious, but you didn't do all that much. You can take credit for it,
yeah.
But you didn't have to put yourself out all that much to do it.
There's a recipe in the book for pot roast, and I noticed that you use Coke.
Yeah.
And coffee.
Yeah, they're both surprisingly delicious. So I don't know if you've ever had when I was growing up, you'd have the, not necessarily at my house, but at friends' houses, you'd have the pot roast with the Coke and the onion soup mix.
Yeah, yeah.
So this kind of builds on those kind of flavors, so you get that sort of smokiness from the coffee, you get the fried onions in there providing the body, and then the Coke, you don't taste sweetness, but it sort of balances the whole thing in a really nice way, and it colors the sauce, and it just provides a richness that you can't quite put your finger on.
Yeah, it just looks gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it probably tastes better.
It does.
Yeah.
It's actually even better the second day if you spoon some of that gravy on it with some, you know, soft buns.
Yeah. And baking for you, I mean, baking for me just seems like it's just such a chore because, you know, you're measuring stuff out and it takes, I mean, it doesn't take as long as it seems, but, it you know, there's a number of things that you have to sort of look at.
Yeah.
When I read your recipes, it seems easy.
It is. I don't bake as much because going back to the diabetes and whatnot, but when I do, I try and just, you know, do, again, simple recipes that produce impressive or delicious results. So things like the radio pudding are, it was my grandfather's recipe. It's, you know, you stir a bunch of things together, put them in a pot, pour some water over it, and then a little while later you have this cake with its own sauce. So it's about trying to find things that are shortcuts and that are delicious, but that you don't have to, you know, dirty every single bowl and spoon that you own to make.
Right. And spam, I mean, is that something that you have a lot of?
Not a lot.
No.
We do eat it. We quite like it, actually. And it's one of those things I had when I was a kid that I always kind of liked.
Yeah.
It's very salty, so it's something that I wouldn't say eat every day, but... You know, no food itself is actually bad for you. It's the amount that you eat and the frequency. So a little spam and some fried rice is delicious, and it'll lift your mood right up.
It has a bit of a stigma, doesn't it?
It does, and it's undeserved.
Yeah.
When you look at what's in spam, it's nothing bad.
Yeah.
I think that people just have this association with it being from maybe a time in their lives when food wasn't great or when you were
right
trying to get by. But it's, you know, it's popular. People like it. It must be good.
Yeah, and so you mentioned this recipe for fried rice.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that when you make for people, they enjoy a great deal?
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not everybody, but when you have your more adventurous eaters or people who remember it fondly,
yeah,
will eat it and be reminded about how good it is. And I don't know.
I noticed a dedication photo of Nick and Hunter, your husband and your son. I looked at it for a few minutes because it looked familiar, then I realized what it was. That's Reno's on Broadway and Main, right?
It is.
Yeah. Where do you guys like eating out?
We, right now with the three-year-old and him being picky, we primarily go places that serve waffles.
Mm-hmm.
That's his favorite food. So the Dutch Wooden Shoe Cafe on Canby is fabulous.
Yeah.
You will get a breakfast so big there that you'll have to lie down. It's really good. Miro Waffle House on Main Street is really nice, and they're doing some interesting things with waffles and sandwiches.
Yeah.
And the Red Wagon Cafe down on Hastings is great because they serve pancakes into the evening, and you can get some really great grown-up food, but, you know, it's kid-friendly. A lot of our going out right now is about teaching the little one to eat in public and to behave in restaurants, which I'm hoping pays off.
Yeah. Well, as I said off the top, this is such an enjoyable book because there's a lot of usefulness in it, and it looks good, and it I'm sure it tastes good.
Oh,
once I start making the stuff out of it.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. It's a terrific achievement, and good luck with the book, Emily.
Thank you so much. It was great chatting with you.
The same. The website, wellfedflatbroke.com. The book is called Well Fed Flat Broke: Recipes for Modest Budgets and Messy Kitchens. It's from Arsenal Pulp Press. Do get it. It's a fun book, and if you're like me, you're wanting to get off the phone now and try some of this stuff. Emily White, the book's author, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.